The five elements are a theory that comes from Taoist philosophy. I'm not going to go into it too much in detail right now, because we can have a discourse on the five elements, and that would be much more a theoretical discourse. The practical aspect is that the Taoists saw the world as this happening thing moving at all times, and that was called Wu Qi,
the limitless, ultimate, or infinite.
What came from that is the yin-yang symbol, two complementary forces which are in balance, either in harmony or disharmony, and each force has within the center of the complementary force its own opposite. So in the middle of yang, you see the black dot yin. In the middle of yin, you see the black dot yang. And we'll get into that when we do a course on that. And from there, you get into another level of where you have maximum yin, little yang, maximum yang. Okay, you're just coming down. You don't have to memorize. I just want you to have the picture in your head. And this is all on that Wikipedia page. And just for the record, I mean, the Wikipedia page is pretty good as a general introduction on a lot of things. So then from little maximum yang to maximum yin and the two in between, and that divides out into another eight symbols, which become the eight symbols of the I Ching, the 64 hexagrams, the eight basic symbols. And then the interplay of those eight symbols creates what the Taoists call the 10,000 things, or the universe, material. And the material is constantly in transition. And this transition is what the five elements are. Because in Chinese, the word is called xing, which means transition, phase. It doesn't mean, it's not element, like in the Western concept of you have the fire element, you have the earth element, you have air element, you have water element. But in the Chinese, it's really a correct translation would be the five phases or the five transitions. So everything moves through this cycle. And this cycle is fundamental to feng shui. It's fundamental to fortune telling. It's fundamental to the Chinese calendar. It's fundamental to how Chinese tradition picks what day to get married, what day to die, what day to sign contracts, because these five elements are then merged with what they call the 12 earthly branches, which are, you would know better as the 12 animals, right? The monkey, the horse, the dog, the sheep, the bull, the snake, the astrological signs. Those 12 animals, gone through the entire five element sequence, gives us 60, right? And that then becomes the whole thing for Chinese fortune telling. So the five elements is a theoretical structure of how things move through reality, through phases. And each element has associated with it everything. So everything fits into that. And what you've read on Wikipedia will show you that. If you click on the drawing that I just had you download, you can open that. You don't have to look in the camera. I'd rather you look at the drawing. There are many charts, by the way. You'll go onto the internet. It's now full of this stuff. I was musing when I first started studying this over 40 years ago. You could hardly find anything. And now it's just so much stuff all over the place. And the images I'm trying to select for you, and also the reason why I select Wikipedia, is because it's quite direct and simple to get the information across. So this chart that I had you download puts the five elements based on their organs. And the structure here is a little bit different. Usually we have fire on top, but this time they're putting wood on top. So you can see the liver and gallbladder for wood, and then fire is heart and small intestine. Spleen is stomach is earth, which we're going to do today. Lung and large intestine is metal, and then kidney, urinary bladder is water. The reason I gave you this chart is because on the right, you'll see a list from 1 to 13. And each one of these objects, the viscera means the organs, then the bowels and the elements, then the sense organs, the tissues, emotional activity, season, environmental factors, sound, color, taste, direction, time of day, they're all listed in these different elements. So you can go through that at your own leisure. We will eventually, if we want to take the class further, we'll go into all that stuff further on. But they're all interrelated. And the last general thing is that the elements have a relationship among each other. There's actually six relationships, but we're only going to assess the two main ones. One is what's called, if you look at the arrow, solid arrow on the lower left hand, generation cycle. Each element generates the element after it. And this is called the mother-son cycle. So if we start at Earth, where we're going to start today, Earth is the mother of the lungs. And so it generates the lungs. Lungs are the mother of the kidney. Kidney is the mother of liver. Liver is the mother of heart, or fire. Wood is the mother of fire. Fire is the mother of Earth. Same way, Earth is the son of fire. Okay? There's also, so that's called the generation cycle. And it's easy to remember because Earth becomes metal. You take metal out of the Earth, right? Metal becomes water is the one that people get confused a little bit because, but think in terms of metal can be melted into a liquid. And also, if metal is left outside at night, one often also can find condensation on the metal. Then water, of course, creates wood. If you put water in the earth, we have sprouts. Wood can be burned for fire, and fire eventually creates ash, which becomes earth. So that's called the generation cycle. Then you have what's called the control cycle. Here they're calling it the supporting cycle. And that's the internal. And this is otherwise, we call this the grandmother-grandson. So you can see how Earth is the mother of lungs. Lungs are the mother of kidney. Therefore, Earth would be the grandmother of kidney. Very, very natural. And this cycle is a little bit different. It's what we call in Chinese the control cycle. So in this cycle, as you're seeing it, what we understand is that the control cycle is different from the generation cycle insofar as the grandmother controls the grandson. So in the control cycle, what happens is the element controls the grandson. So for example, Earth becomes banks of water. Water has to flow where it can. Water controls fire. Water will put out fire. Fire controls metal. Fire will melt metal. Metal controls wood. It will get chopped. And wood actually grows in and controls the earth. So those are the two basic relationships in the fundamental five elements. Is that clear so far? So,
all right, can I ask a question?
Sure, of course.
So as I'm looking at this five elements chart,
right,
within each element, there usually the point number 13 has a time span.
What time of day.
Oh, okay.
It's out. So for example, and this is, in fact, this beginning introduction to our Qigong class, I encourage you ask questions because it's actually really fascinating because it has a lot to do with health. And something we're going to talk about tomorrow in my approach to Buddhist teaching, but also it's very influenced by my closeness to Chinese culture. The Chinese are practitioners. They're empirical. They're practical. Famous saying by Deng Xiaoping, white cat, black cat, who cares what color the cat is as long as it catches the mouse. And that's a very much a Chinese approach vis-a-vis on the other side of the Himalayas. You have this beautiful, very elaborate intellectual analysis of reality and truth and things like that that was done in Hindu culture or Indian culture, Indo-Aryan culture. The Chinese are really practical. And so, for example, in this five element, if you look at the earth, which is 7 a.m. to 11 a.m., and that's broken down into two times, one for the stomach and one for the spleen. The stomach is 7 to 9, and 9 to 11 is the spleen. Generally, we will see, as I can tell you in clinical studies, when people have stomach problems or spleen problems, they will manifest at these hours. That's one thing that will happen. For example, a person who has liver disease will often feel sick between 1 and 3 a.m., and that's the hour of the liver. It's related to a kind of anxiety, insomnia, the liver flares up. Remember, this is a cycle. Okay, actually, that's a very good question, Sam. Because if you imagine the clock starting, I'm going to use the European system or 24-hour system, 24 going all the way around to 24, right? Top 24, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, all the way to 24. The energy of the specific organ is full, or the lead of the flow is in that time zone that belongs to that element. So for example, at 7 a.m., the energy is in the stomach. At 11 a.m., 9 a.m., it goes into the spleen. At 11 a.m., it goes into the heart. At 1 p.m., it goes into the small intestine. At 3 p.m., it goes into the bladder. At 5 p.m., it goes into the kidney. At 7 p.m., it goes into the pericardium. And at 9 p.m., it goes into the triple warmer. 11, it goes into the gallbladder. And then 1, it goes into the liver. Then 3, into the lungs. 5, into the large intestine. And then 7 back into the stomach. So we actually use this structure to diagnose. It's very, very interesting, and it's very, very effective. Other things that if you go to some real traditional acupuncturists and you have, for example, heart disease, they'll want to give you acupuncture exactly at the time of the heart, which is 11 to 1 midday. I mentioned to you the 12 animals, right? The 12 earthly branches. Well, we have 24 hours divided each 2-hour segments. Those are 12 segments. So for example, the horse is 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So people who are born in the year of the horse, that will be a time they'll either feel really good if they're feeling healthy, or if they're feeling really ill, that will be a time they will be weak. The Chinese have done this for 3,000 years. They've been watching it. They're practical. They have actually divided the years into a 180-year cycle consisting of 360-year cycles. Remember I said 5 elements times 12 earthly branches of 60? So they have the first cycle, the middle cycle, or it's called the lower cycle, the middle cycle, and the upper cycle. That after 180 years, this is based on an observation where the Earth comes exactly back to where it was 180 years ago. Now, this is not astrology in the sense of stars. It is from the result of the observation of the relationship between the Earth, the Sun, and the Moon. So it's really based on seasons and on natural flows, which, as we now know, gravity and all the forces in the cosmos, we know is very accurate. So they put together a system that said that the Earth will return exactly to where it was before in terms of energetic pulls of the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun in 180 years, after it goes through 360-year cycles. And they've been following this since, I think, the first time they found evidence is about, I think originally about 1500 to 2000 before the Common Era, so it's almost 3,000 plus years they've been following the system. And there are people who swear by it. He checks a feng shui guy, when to invest, when to sign contracts, when to marry your kids, when to bury your parents, how, all of this. That all comes back to the five elements. Okay. And we'll spend it, if you're interested in this, we can spend a whole class just on that. But that's theoretical, and I wanted to give you something very practical. So if we go to number, does it have it in here? Actually, yes, number 7, right? So we see number 7, that's season. And let's now take a look at the earth element, which is the spleen and the stomach. And what is number 7? What can you read there? It says, anybody?
Late summer,
exactly. That's Indian summer, as we all know. And that's what we're just approaching, which is why we're starting with the earth element today. Cool. Okay, because Indian summer is about to hit us. Now, Indian summer is the period when we have these really hot summer period days, which we've all had, I think, recently, and then you go into fall, and there's a period where you feel, in Geneva, it actually just occurred now. We've had our last really hot days, but the heat is slightly different. It's become a little bit more moist, not as dry as before, and there's a little bit, it cools off more in the evening times, whereas before the heat would last all night long. And even in Hong Kong, where it's always humid, or in the desert in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where it's always dry, these little subtle changes can be felt. And that period between when the heat of summer has just kind of broke and before fall actually comes in is called late summer or Indian summer. Sometimes in late summer, we have the Sirocos or the Santa Ana winds in California or the Diablo winds in Northern California. But it's a dynamic, again, of Earth, the Sun, and the Moon working together in how they relate. And that's the Earth element. The Earth element wasn't always in this position.
In the five element chart.
It used to be in the middle. And this is important for what we're going to do today. If you imagine, and if you take this chart and you suddenly move the earth into the middle and move the kidney and the heart down and bring the lungs to the middle, you would suddenly see four elements around and one in the middle. Does everybody understand what I'm envisioning here? And then the arrows would still be the same, but instead, from the heart on the right, it would go to the left, to the center, to the earth, and then down to the lungs. Everybody understand what I'm saying that? If you keep the arrows in their direction, just move the circle of the spleen into the middle, then you have the liver on top, the lungs on the bottom, the heart on the right, the kidney on the left, and the spleen in the center. Mm-hmm. That was the original structure of the five elements. Because earth is the center. And around Earth is east, west, north, south, the four directions. And those are the directions that go with each organ. Okay? Make sense to everybody? Now, why did I say that? Do you recall that? Did you all get the map of the human body that I sent you? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, if you have that and you can pull that up, if you don't have it, I can pull it up for you here. Well, let's see, human organs. There we go. Do you need me to send that to you, or do you all have that?
No, I have it.
You have it. Okay, great. So, if you look at that map, you see the heart is on the top, so to speak, right? The kidneys would be on the bottom. You don't see them, they're in the backside, but they're behind where it says kidneys there? The kidney's name is on the left. You see the two kidneys that are kind of faded out? Mm-hmm. Everybody see that? So they're on the backside, but they're on the bottom. And then on the right side, you see the liver, right?
Yeah.
And on the left side, you see the spleen. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the lungs that are around the heart. Okay, so this is a very interesting thing because the position of the organs were something that was actually influential in the creation of this new modern form of the five elements. Because initially, and in actuality, the earth element, I believe, is more accurately described as the pancreas. And if we look at where the pancreas is, it sits right center of all the organs. And that's what the original map was about, the pancreas being in the center and then the organs around it. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Now, why was the pancreas, and why do I want to emphasize to you the pancreas? And we often call it in Chinese medicine or five element, we call it spleen pancreas, the earth element. Why is the pancreas emphasized? Because what the spleen does is the spleen primarily works on your immune system. But what the pancreas does, the pancreas actually works on your digestion. So when the pancreas, spleen and pancreas are in the earth element, if you go back to your earth element chart, you'll see that spleen and stomach are the earth element. So if we're talking digestion, it makes much more sense that pancreas and stomach are working together, not spleen and stomach. In fact, spleen is very much related to immune system, and in traditional Chinese medicine, so are the lungs. In fact, the lungs are the first gate of defense. Interestingly enough, if you go to the old model, then we have this pancreas in the center, the heart on the top, the kidneys on the bottom, the liver on the right, and the spleen related to the lungs on the left. We're back in the old model. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
All this clear so far? Don't have to memorize, but is it clear? Okay. Now, what is Qigong? Originally, there were a group of people in China who were followed this practice that they eventually was called Taoism, but in their day, they didn't have it called Taoism. It was just a practice. And these people were ascetics who went to the mountains, believed society was rather corrupt and of no use, and the best way to live in harmony and have a happy life was to live in nature and harmonize with nature. You would feel the seasons, you would feel the weather, you'd interact with your own growing your own food, you would interact with the animals. They would move to places where there were very few doctors, there was very few services. They would all have to be self-dependent, like a hermit in the mountain. But they had to stay healthy because, of course, if you break a leg or you get sick somewhere in the mountains, then basically that's it, you're done. They developed a whole series of exercises to harmonize their internal physiological functions with their external environment. And that's everything from physical movement to actual meditations and deeper energetic and spiritual movements. And that was called Nei Gong, N-E-I, Nei Gong, which translates as internal work. There is a character in Chinese Gong, which means literally work, go out to do work, like digging a ditch. But this character Gong means the kind of work that brings mastery and a return. The work you put in gives back the point where you become a master at your craft. Everybody understand what I mean by that? Not just a work doing hard work, but something that actually returns to you a skill that becomes so profound that you become a master, like a great musician, for example. They practice, Some people practice their whole life and they're good musicians. Some people practice with a certain attitude and intention and suddenly, boom, one day something clicks and you've got a maestro, you've got a virtuoso. That's what that word gong means. So nei gong means somebody who's, nei means internal, someone who's completely mastered the harmony of internal
functions and life
in the work, so that they now become
a spiritual master.
Okay, clear so far? During the period of Qin Shi Huang Di, which means the Emperor Qin Shi Huang Di, which is 200 BCE, there was a collection of all kinds of stuff. He was unifying China, he was burning a lot of books, he was kind of like a Caesar, an emperor, sort of trying to control everything. These ascetics were coming down from the mountains. Sometimes they were forced to, sometimes they just happened to. And China was quite cosmopolitan at that time. People noticed that these people had amazing abilities, what they call in the Indian tradition, siddhas. They had supernatural powers, all kinds of things. And people wanted to understand what they were. So they started asking these people to teach them. Well, of course, to teach these kind of skills, one would have to go and isolate oneself and really focus and be in the cave for years and years and years. But the people didn't want to do that. They wanted to learn the skills that would be appropriate to them. The martial artists wanted to learn skills that would make them better fighters. The doctors wanted to learn skills that would make them better acupuncturists and herbalists. The legal scholars wanted to learn skills that helped them write better legal doctrines of how society should be run. The religious people or practitioners at that time, they were Taoist, religious, and Buddhist practitioners in the city, wanted to learn how they could meditate or become better spiritual teachers. So neigong started to be split because the people would only teach the skill that was appropriate to who was interested. Everybody follow me? And that was the birth of qigong. Qi means energy, and gong is the same gong. So now all of a sudden we don't have an exercise that is training the entire internal body to harmonize with nature, but we have exercises that are specifically to create certain functions. Be a better fighter, be a better doctor, heal patients, be a better legalist, be a better Buddhist or Taoist or whatever one wants to do. Okay? And the difference is that in qigong, you use the will or the I, the E, the intention to move the qi. Whereas in neigong, you actually take away the I, the intention, to allow the qi to move. The difference would be if my hand, my wrist has a problem, okay? And I'm using qigong to heal my wrist, I'm focusing my mind to pass the qi through the wrist so it heals the problem, okay? Neigong healing of the wrist would be I withdraw my presence and mind from the wrist so that
universal qi or the qi flowing between the earth and the sun or the earth and the moon
around the wrist flows through the point and it heals. Even though the movement looks almost the same, the intention completely different. Is everybody following so far? One uses my own mind to push the qi through the joint. The other takes my mind away so the joint flows, so to speak, with the qi in the universe. And the difference is that when I use my mind, the cells all along the way become more attached to me. So the arm, the wrist, becomes healed, but it's more separate from what's outside the wrist. Whereas when I withdraw my mind, it's a slower healing process, but when it's healed, the arm is more in the flow of nature and the universe, and less the ego. Make sense? Please ask questions anytime you want. You don't, you know, anything that's confusing, feel free to ask. You're not going to be stupid. Nobody, not, these are all questions that everybody can learn from.
It's a lot to take in.
Yeah. Difficult? Just go back to what we were talking about in anatta. Neigong is using anatta. When you realize there's no permanent self, then you're healing
by removing the barriers of separateness.
Whereas qigong is presuming there is me, I, Oren. So I'm emphasizing this hand is Oren. I'm healing it, but now it's even more Oren. Okay, because my mind, intention, is more in the cells. So leave it at that. We can think about that. You can ask questions next time. For every element, there were a practices, Qigong practice, that were learned for healing, particularly for healing. And today we're going to go into exercises for the spleen or the pancreas, the earth element. Okay? So far, so good, right? Please have a look at your map and you see where the, I want you to focus where the pancreas is. So the pancreas is, it's right here behind your stomach in the center, just above your navel. Okay? So you can all sit comfortably, just put your hand right there, just above your navel. So if your little finger, say this part of your hand rests on your navel, your palm's gonna be right over where your pancreas is, right in the center.
The pancreas is on the left side, correct?
No, it's on the center. Pancreas is in the center. The spleen is on the left side.
Okay.
So we're gonna focus now using the pancreas as the object. Mm-hmm. Keeping your palm there, in the five element chart, if you look at the spleen and you look at number six, the emotional activity, okay? And you see overthinking, correct?
Mm-hmm.
For the earth element. When you go and you read the Wikipedia description of the five elements, or you go online and you see other developments, you will find, just like with the Buddhist material, many different interpretations, although there's a little bit more coherence with the five element material. But there are some differing approaches. And even some of the qualities listed on Wikipedia, for example, I didn't agree with, and I wasn't taught that way by my teachers. However, over the years, through my practices, I've come to use slightly different terms than the traditional terms for the emotions of the elements, but slightly different than the traditional terms. So what I want you today to think about is, when you actually consider your pancreas, I would like you to think of the emotion of the pancreas is compassion. Why suddenly use the word compassion? Because we look at and analyze what's the function of the pancreas. Does anybody know offhand what the function of the pancreas is? Okay, the pancreas produces enzymes for digestion. It helps you digest your food. So all this stuff that you take in goes into your small intestine. Your stomach has acids. It breaks down the food, but it doesn't digest the food. It breaks down the food. Your small intestine, which comes after the spleen, absorbs the food. But in order to be absorbed, it has to be broken down in constituent parts like sugars and proteins and fats. The spleen produces enzymes that helps you to digest your food. So what it's doing is it's harmonizing what you take in so that it would work with your body. When a person has dysfunction of the pancreas, they can't digest their food. And that's why pancreatic cancer is so severe. You've all heard of pancreatic cancer. Steve Jobs passed away from pancreatic cancer. When people get pancreatic cancer, they usually go very quickly because they completely are blocked from digesting food. You remember what Steve Jobs looked like before he died? They cannot digest food. Well, interestingly here, if you add overthinking, if a person worries and worries and worries and worries and worries, what happens when you're over-worried? You can't digest your food, right? But also, I would say, it applies when a person cannot be compassionate to themselves, then that's what causes the over-worry. So I would say compassion even precedes the overthinking or the worry. So the true emotion or emotional quality of the pancreas is compassion. We develop compassion inside the pancreas. So
can
far, so good?
Ask, yeah. Can I ask something? So there are three organs that are associated with earth element rather than two?
No, yes and no. In every element has a yin and a yang organ. And actually in Chinese, the yang are not considered organ, they're considered bowels, which is why they call them bowels. They're considered five yin organs: heart, spleen, lungs, kidney, and liver. But the spleen is the term that was applied through the understanding of the times of what the Chinese referred to. But in fact, when we look more at the description of the function of the earth element, yin organ, we find it correlates more closely with the pancreas. It is often now called or referred to as spleen/pancreas. So it's actually considered to be one function in Chinese medical theory or five element theory. One organ, spleen/pancreas.
It says stomach on here too. So is the stomach in there as well?
Yeah, the stomach is the bowel for the earth element.
Okay.
The Qigong, interestingly enough, the Taoist Qigong does not really focus on exercises for the yang organs. There are some exercises, but not very many. They focus mostly on the exercises for the yin organs because the yin organs are considered to where the toxins will congregate. Okay, this is all before we get to the exercise. So we're talking about the emotion of compassion. We're talking about the center of the body right here. We're also talking about a color. The color is orange or amber. It says yellow. It's not really yellow. It's incorrect. It's amber or orange. Saffron color, more or less. Okay. What we're going to do is I'm going to teach you a breathing exercise you can do sitting down. And as we breathe, we're going to then visualize the organ, the pancreas. And as we visualize the organ, the pancreas, we're going to bring the color of the pancreas and leave it there with it, the right color, and we're going to feel the emotion. Okay? Are there any questions before I start to show you the breathing exercise? No? Okay, great. So I want you to sit slightly forward in your chair so you're not leaning back because you need your hands. Okay? And the hands start here. Right hand on the bottom, left hand on the top. For women, it's the opposite. Women, it's left hand on the bottom, right hand on the top. Men, right hand on the bottom, left hand on the top. Okay, and you sit it right at your spleen. Can you see my spleen here? And what we're gonna do is we're gonna inhale. As we inhale, the arms open. You just watch me for now. And then we exhale, the arms close. And as the arms close, we exhale, we inhale again. The right hand turns up, the left hand turns down, and we press up and down, above us and below us. Okay, so it goes like this. That makes sense? Okay, we start here at, I'm having it a bit higher so you can see it easier. At the spleen, we inhale, we exhale, they come back together, then we inhale again as the left hand goes down, the right hand goes up, right over the center line. You just put your arms in position. You don't have to do the breathing. Then we turn, okay? We inhale as we turn to the left and look to the left. And then we inhale to the left part of our body here. So we inhale here and still completely press. And then we return to the center with the arms coming back with the sound of. Now, what is that sound? It's like WHO, but without pronouncing who, we push the air out almost like it's a whistle. So it's. You want to all try that? It's like the wind. Okay? So you imagine WHO, but you're not saying who. For example, I don't know how much you can hear me clear. If I say who, it's the who part without the ooh. Okay? So you're saying who without making the actual noise of the ooh. So I'm just going to show you the motions. Just watch me. Inhale, exhale. Inhale, exhale. Inhale, exhale back with who. Okay, let's walk through that without actually, don't worry about the breath. Let's just do the motions. So hands at the spleen, pancreas.
Women's right hand on top?
Yes, women right hand on top. Okay, inhale, and they don't have to be really huge inhales. Comfortable, you know, comfortable long inhales through the nose always. Yes, and the tongue has to touch the top of the mouth. Okay, just behind the teeth. So inhale, exhale. Inhale. Okay, right hand up. Right hand up. Make sure it's your right hand up. Exactly. Always your right hand up. There you go. Right hand always goes up. Then we turn to the left as we exhale. Then we inhale to the left rib cage by stretching a bit more. And then we return to the center with the exhalation of. We're going to do that three times. Then we're going to put our hands over the pancreas. And then we are going to close our eyes, and I'll then guide you through the rest. Okay? Are we ready to start? Sorry, I'm being cut off here. Are we ready to start? Don't worry about doing it perfect. It's going to take a little bit of time. We start. Women, left hand on the bottom, right hand on top. Men, left hand on top, right hand on the bottom. Okay. Inhale. Exhale back together. Inhale, separate, right hand up. Exhale to the left as you turn to your left and look at your left. Inhale to the side. And then return back with the sound of. Okay, inhale, separate. Exhale back together. Inhale up, right hand up. Exhale, you turn to the left. Inhale to the left. And back to the center, relax with the word. Inhale one more time, separate. Exhale, back together. Inhale up as the hands separate, palm up and palm down, bend at the wrist. Say inhale to the left. Exhale, inhale, and come back to the center with the sound. We're keeping your eyes closed, place your palm on your pancreas. Tongue up and start to breathe quietly. And bring your attention to the location of the pancreas under your palm based on your memory of the map that you saw, the body map. As you get to the pancreas and you become aware of it, start to breathe with the pancreas. That means when you inhale, you feel the pancreas expanding. And when you exhale, you feel the pancreas contracting. Breathe through the nose, tongue touching upper palate. Inhale, pancreas expands. And exhale, pancreas contracts. I'll count 9 breaths doing that. 1. Two. Three. Four. Five. Keep the body relaxed. 6. Seven. Eight. Nine. And now continue breathing normally. And I want you to visualize the pancreas as an amber color, like amber or like saffron. And breathe for 4 or 5 breaths. Visualizing the color amber. And now holding the visualization of the color amber in your mind, I want you to sense and see the emotion and feeling of compassion in the pancreas. This is a bit difficult, but just if you can't have anything come to you, just think of the word compassion in the pancreas. And as you think of the word compassion, think of the feeling compassion in the pancreas. Then visualize the feeling of the compassion radiating throughout the pancreas, filling the pancreas, still in a visualization of an amber saffron color, using your breath. Compassion, acceptance, tolerance, kind of universal love for all things, allowing things to be. Harmony with all things. All those qualities of compassion in the pancreas in an amber color. With every breath, the feeling of compassion expands in the pancreas. And then allow the amber color, the saffron color of the pancreas to radiate from the pancreas out throughout the whole body. Keeping still the pancreas foremost in mind, in focus, in an amber and saffron color, and the feeling of compassion in the pancreas. Then as you're holding the pancreas in amber saffron color and it's radiating throughout the body and the feeling of compassion, think of an experience of love that you've had somewhere, someone, something that just makes you feel completely at ease, completely in love, completely relaxed, completely happy. And let that experience manifest with a smile on your lips. And let your mouth form the smile. And then once you have the smile, bring the smile down to the pancreas and merge the smile with the amber saffron color radiating throughout the body with the feeling of compassion. And breathe several breaths, experiencing a smile in this pancreas as if the pancreas itself was smiling, radiating a saffron amber color with compassion filling the organ. And slowly bring your attention back to your whole body, allowing the pancreas to continue to radiate, the amber saffron color, continue to smile, and continue to feel the compassion. But your awareness comes back to your whole body. And you take a deep breath. Your eyes close and you let it out through the nose. Second deep breath. Let it out through the nose. And a third deep breath. and let it out through the nose. Allow your hands to come to your legs, rest upon your thigh or your lap. Allow your breathing to return to normal. And slowly, when you're ready, open your eyes without focusing on anything in particular, just allowing them to slowly come back to being present. Any questions, comments? Share anything?
I feel energy flowing out of my hands.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Feelings? You may have, when we do these exercises, you may have emotions and feelings arising because all the emotions that we have are stored in our body. And one of the things that the Taoists used to teach was that our organs store a lot of our emotions. So for example, when we're speaking of the earth element and the spleen pancreas, the traditional emotion is the emotion of worry. So if we are worried about something or concerned about something and we constantly think about it, when we start to flush the spleen pancreas, those emotions will come to the surface and need to be released. Any other comments, questions? Everybody feel okay with the exercise?
I felt emotion.
You felt emotion.
I felt my eyes tearing up.
Uh-huh. Anybody feel the exercise was difficult? I mean, really hard to focus on or get into?
You know, with all these colors that you introducing us right now as amber, it sort of remind me of the, is it Reiki?
Mm-hmm.
Is it
Reiki?
Is that even similar or has completely different?
Reiki is a hands-on healing technique. It's hands-on that you use your hands, but you don't touch the person, but it works with the body's energy as well. The reason why color and light is so involved with any kind of energetic practice is because light is the closest thing we have to the energy. Like auras, people have auras. Energy manifests and light is the easiest thing for us to associate, which is why we visualize a specific color with a specific process. And every color has specific function. Red, for example, heats up and stimulates. And it's long been known, for example,
why is Valentine's Day associated with red?
Because it actually does stimulate the hormones. Now science is able to measure all of this. A person in a red-colored car, a red Ferrari, it stimulates the hormones at both genders. So colors work very much on an energetic level, and it's very easy for us to perceive them and also easy for us to visualize them. Colors very much are relevant. I did a first level Reiki course many, many years ago just to find out what it was about. So I'm not so familiar with all the details of the higher levels. But if they ask people to think in terms of colors, that would be the similar thing. Other questions or comments? Okay, there are two parts to this Qigong exercise. And you can separate them. The first part of where we start with here, inhaling, exhaling, can be done on its own. And what that does is that detoxifies the spleen pancreas or the earth element organ. If a person has spleen problems, they could do that exercise 100 times a day and it will have an effect. In fact, there's a whole set, we're going to get to the wood, which is the liver, years ago, when I learned this from the teacher that I learned it from, well, it's now 40 years ago, he had published this in a magazine, Yoga Journal, that just started out. And it got to somebody who was incarcerated in a prison in, I think it was Florida or somewhere down Georgia. And they were in for some serious crime almost forever. And they had liver cancer. So he got a letter. My teacher got a letter from this prisoner. He's diagnosed with liver cancer. He saw the article. He started practicing up to 1,000 times a day. And 3 months later, the liver cancer was gone. And that's the only thing that changed. Now, I'm not saying that everybody has that kind of response, but I know for a fact that these things do happen. And they happen more frequently, especially if people practice seriously. So, for example, how could we apply this? Let's say we're really worried about something. We're worried about a family member or worried about a friend, which in today's COVID situation is not uncommon. Or let's say we're having a real hard time, we're really angry, not angry, but we're having a hard time relating to other people, empathy, something the opposite of compassion, say intolerance. You could practice this exercise and you'll relieve that pressure. You'll relieve the worry, you'll relieve the stress, and you'll be able to create more compassion. There's two parts to the Qigong exercise. One is the detoxification. That's inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale. 3 times. You could do more, 10 times or even 100 times, but a round of 3 is very good for a daily practice. That's the detoxification. The second half of the visualization is the regeneration. Detoxification, regeneration. I would not suggest doing regeneration without doing detoxification, but you can do detoxification and not have to do the regeneration. It will regenerate on its own, but when you visualize the color and the feeling, the emotion, and the smile, then it will regenerate quicker. A footnote. The smile is an old Taoist technique called the inner smile, and we'll be using it with all the different elements. It's one of my favorites, and I taught this to all my cancer patients, and it has remarkable response. What you need to do is you just need to go to an experience you have in your mind with something you really felt a lot of love for. It can be a person you really love. It can be a food you really love. For me, it's often the image of a dog I used to have that I loved very much. She's who I think of, Jazz. So I think of her, and I just have big, and whenever I see her, I just have this huge smile on my face because I just know how much I loved her. I take that smile and put that in whatever organ I'm working with, and then let the organ absorb that smile. Now, very important in this exercise is make the smile on your face. Even if you're really in pain and you're really frustrated and you're really angry, force yourself to smile. Why? Because we now know that when we put the muscles in our face into a smile, it actually changes our hormones. It changes our neurotransmitters. And this is a very fundamental principle of Chinese and Taoist medicine.
One of the main reasons why there isn't a separate discipline called psychology in Taoist medicine is
everything was seen to be related. You can approach the body from inside out or from outside in. In order to reach the psychological or emotional states, we can actually change the physical form. Follow me? So by actually making the smile, and this is actually laboratory and clinically already proven many times over, many years ago, by making a smile, you start to shift the neurotransmitters in your brain and the chemicals that are being released into a more positive state. The same thing will happen if you make a frown, by the way. It's not just about keeping a nice youthful face. It's also about, so again, stage one, the inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale, detoxification. Step two, going to the organ, taking the hands in the same configuration you had before.
Men, left hand against the pancreas and right hand on top of the left hand. And women, right hand against the pancreas and left hand on top of right hand.
Feel the pancreas, locate the pancreas in your mind. Start to breathe with the pancreas. Remember, we did 9 breaths breathing with the pancreas.
Does this sound
familiar to anybody? Breathing with the body? Breathing with the body, I know I breathe in. Breathing out with the body, I know I breathe out. You'll find many parallels here. So we're actually breathing with the spleen, in and out. Even if you just think you're imagining it, that's fine. You're not really imagining it, because if you're thinking it, it's happening. At some level in your body, it's happening. That's a whole nother class we can get into. So you breathe with the spleen 9 times, minimum 9 times, to really get into it. You can breathe more if you want. You could spend half an hour just breathing with the spleen. You can do this lying down if you want to, although you can't do the detoxification method lying down, but sitting is comfortable. And once you've used your breath for 9 times, you then start to visualize the color, which gives the vibration of the color. This relates to what you asked, Quinn. The vibration of that color goes into the spleen pancreas, that color of saffron, that color of amber. And then you get to the feeling. Now, how do I know what compassion is? Well, familiarize yourself, do some reading, go to the dictionary. What does it mean to be compassionate? What's compassion? And then think about your own associations in your own life when you felt that way. Start to make connections between what you've actually experienced with what you're learning that means. And then bring that feeling into the spleen pancreas and expand it with the color, and then allow the color to radiate from the spleen pancreas, and it will radiate to the whole body. And because the elements are all working all the time. So we want our elements to radiate to our whole body because we have all different kind of parts. For example, the body part of the earth element, if I go back to that, let's go back to that chart, 5 elements. If we look on the list over here, number 5, the tissues, the 5 tissues, you see that number 5 on earth is muscle. So that means that all the muscles in the body are part of the earth element. So when you radiate out from the spleen pancreas to the whole body, you're working with all the tissues, the muscle tissues, all the way down to your toes and all the way up to the top of your head and out to your fingertips. That's why we radiate out from the organ through the whole body. Okay? What's useful and this is very common both in Taoist and Buddhist practice, is they see a character. Yes, usually, for example, you know the character Om. You've seen the Om symbol everywhere, right? That's a letter in the Sanskrit alphabet, Om. And what they'll do in the Taoist tradition, they'll see an image or a character of spleen or of compassion or some mystical shamanic character, and they'll bring that character into the organ. What you can do is you can pick any character. You can pick C, or you can pick O, or you can pick a Tibetan character or a Chinese character or a Hebrew character or whatever character you want, an image. And you say, this is my compassion in that image. So then when you visualize the compassion, you bring that image into join in the spleen pancreas with the amber color. And that's what you radiate. You can see the word love on your spleen, on your pancreas. So detoxification, regeneration. After you've done your regeneration, you then allow everything to relax. You bring your breathing back to normal. You bring your awareness back to your present. Usually that, for most people, that means bring them back up into their head. And then as you take 3 deep breaths to really come out of the trance-like state, and then open your eyes and you're done. And that is the Qigong exercise for the earth element. Now, I will write that down step by step and email you on our email list that whole thing together, so you'll have a list for those things, so you won't have to memorize it all at once.
So Oren,
yeah.
It's best to do this sitting down, not standing up.
You can do it standing up. You can do it standing up. In fact, the Taoists have a whole set of lying down, sitting, and standing up. And I was taught these exercises originally standing. You could do these exercises standing. Definitely. And in fact, you could do the detox. For example, let's say you have a morning yoga routine, okay? You get up in the morning, you do your shower, you do your yoga routine. You do this detoxification standing. Then you sit down and do the sitting regeneration and go right into meditation. So they can mix together. But I wouldn't do the regeneration standing, because you'll be standing a long time and you might get a little bit tired, unless you like standing or you have a comfortable position to stand. But you can also do them lying down. You can't do the detoxification lying down, but you can do the regeneration lying down. So for example, when you wake up in the morning or you do a routine or wherever, if you're sitting on the ground after yoga, you can do your sitting detoxification and then lie down in Shavasana and do the regeneration. Shavasana is the corpse pose. Like that, and do the regeneration.
I mean, what you're doing almost seems like part of a Tai Chi, I mean, move or exercise.
Yeah, Tai Chi is a martial art that was based on some very essential principles from Taoist philosophy. And therefore, there are a lot of similarities between Tai Chi and Qigong. And many Qigong movements also have martial applications, because the Taoists in the mountains also need to defend themselves. So they learned what were called the animal frolics, how to mimic animals and how to move and how to help be healthy. So for example, this movement, which is called separating heaven and earth, it's very easy. If someone's punching straight, you're taking that down and then you're taking this up. Once a martial artist learns these movements, it's similar. But the Qigong predates Tai Chi by 1,000 years.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. But Tai Chi is very good. It's excellent. I practice it every day, and it's a wonderful thing. I love it. I'm a big fan of Tai Chi. Other questions?
It's completely fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
Great.
It's all very scientific, which I have no idea.
This is, for me, it's got to be practical. If it's not practical, I have no use for it. I have to be able to make this in my life something that will improve my life, that will help my life, be a happier person, be a better person, be a good human being. If it can't do that, what's the point?
I just want to make a comment. You know, as most of you know, I've been with Warren for over 20 years. And when I first met him, he was so overwhelming. I had no idea what I was stepping into. I was quite sick. I had tried everything and nothing was working. And I really surrendered in my first visit when I went to see him. And it was not an easy journey, because you have to kind of do whatever Warren tells you to do if you wanted to heal. And I did it. And today I could not be or do what I do without having had these tools. So I just am encouraging you to ask the questions, because I know it's a lot of information. He'll explain it as best as he can, and he does an amazing job at it. But, you know, just hang in there, and if in doubt, you know, reach out to him, because it's a wonderful journey. Really is.
I was going to say something for tomorrow, but I'll follow up on Sam on that. My teachers were very traditional, very, very traditional. They were also quite slanted in the Chinese tradition. And as I mentioned before, the Chinese tradition vis-a-vis the Indian tradition, or even the Tibetan tradition, is very empirical and practical. They're not into lots of theorizing and lots of information. And the way I was taught was, practice. Just practice. I'll show you what to do. Practice. And I practiced. And I would then come back and ask a question. No. Practice more. You haven't practiced enough. First practice more. But I don't practice more. You want to show how, you want me to show you how to do it? I'll show you how to do it, but just practice. So they would show me how to do it, and I would practice more. And in that tradition, the more I would practice, I would write down my questions. But the more I would practice, things would become clearer and they would start to make sense. And then once I had a certain foundation in what I was doing, they would start to talk to me about theory and knowledge. But from their point of view, knowledge, information, that's afterwards. First practice, put it in one's body, make it one's own. But I wanted to know, I wanted to understand. So I practiced, and eventually, slowly, a foundation was formed. It's a very different way than teaching in the West. I think it's always important to dive right into what the Buddha said. I did this, I practiced this, and I got this result. This is for you to do now, and here's how I think you should do it. And remember, we've already seen in the Anapanasati Sutta, the Buddha says, of all things, remember the introduction, this is the one that will take you to the very end. This is it. This is the practice. This is what I use to get me where I am. It's got to work. If it doesn't work, don't do it. That kind of practical approach is very important. But I think it has to be practical. It has to be useful. It has to make your life better. It has to make you happier. If it doesn't, then why do it? Seek not so much for the knowledge, but more for the wisdom from the experience. If it's yours, nobody can take it away from you. Doesn't matter what anybody says. I believe with all my heart, that was the intent of the Buddha and his teachings, and that was the intent of the great teachers that came after him. Okay, so next week we'll move on to from earth to metal.